Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Lobo Tigre. He is the editor of The Independent Speculator. Now, Lobo, I've talked a lot about this essential shutdown that we're seeing around the world thanks to this coronavirus and a lot of the market fallouts. But with you, I want to focus a bit on the energy sector, but also touch on the precious metals. And first and foremost, on the precious metals, gold has obviously been I believe standout when it comes to the performance of the metal, as it did again recently break out. It's been on this stair-stepping pattern higher really ever since the later part of 2018. However, there is still a lot of volatility. Gold already this week tested out 1800 and has already pulled back about $100 from that level. What's your general takeaway from this gold market and the volatility we're seeing in it?
Sure. Well, that's a good summary. So just diving right in from there, I think a couple things are interesting and important, maybe not the same on both. But it's really interesting to me that we have gold testing 1800. I mean, that's the getting close to the peak back all those years ago in 2011 after the last big crisis. And yet sentiment seems really negative to me. It's stunning to me that we can see such a terrific rise, of course nothing goes up in a straight line, but it is going up. You know, gold is having a great year. It had a great year last year. Gold, as you said, since 2018 has been doing well. But actually, you know, the bottom for gold was back in 2015, and it has been two steps forward, you know, one step backwards. But you know, that's how markets work. So, you know, the one takeaway is, you know, gold is doing great. You know, that's really the bottom line there, is gold is doing great. And if anybody wants to complain about gold hanging out here at 1700, you know, really get a grip. 1700 is a great price. And okay, COVID has mines shut down, and maybe in the near term, there's some kerfuffles there to be had in the stocks. But this is a great price environment. And everything that we've seen, sort of the other big takeaway is here, is, you know, it's not just technical stair-stepping on the chart. It matches the fundamentals. And the fundamentals are, as Cornell Law School professor Dan Alpert says, you know, we're all modern monetarists now, which is a scary thought. But if you think about it, you know, the Republicans in the U.S. are piling on the spend more money now bandwagon, just like Democrats. Both parties can't give enough money away right now. And okay, you know, but I don't want to get into a political argument about the reasons for that. Never mind the COVID argument and all that stuff. It's a fact. They're spending trillions and trillions of dollars. That's not just a metaphor or an arm-waving thing. That's fact, right? They're spending all these trillions of dollars that they don't have. And that is profoundly significant and supportive for monetary metals like gold and eventually silver. So, the good news is that, you know, this is real. It's supported by fundamentals and it's huge. And I think it's going to be very, very bullish for gold and silver for years to come.
So let's quickly dive into the stocks, because you cover stocks. You usually cover, you mostly cover the smaller stocks, the juniors. However, it's been the majors and the royalty companies that have continued to perform very well. A little bit of money has started to trickle down to these juniors, and we have seen arguably some V-shaped bottoms put in. But what is your thought between the balance of money that has been still largely landing in the producers, the large companies, and the royalty companies?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's true, Corey. With some of these juniors, you know, the better ones that have actual, you know, gold in the ground or whatever the mineral is, you know, the ones that we all knew are good and maybe got away and they went on sale last month and just fell off a cliff with everything else when the market was panicking. Some of those have doubled from their March bottoms. If you could have timed that, and of course, nobody's perfect at timing that, or not, never mind perfect. It's a fool's errand to try to time the market. But the fact remains that if you were lucky enough to buy near the bottom there, that you could have doubled your money already in a matter of weeks in some of these juniors. But as you say, money is finding its way back into the obvious major contenders. And the good news there, I would say, is that it may not be too late. Personally, my view, you know, we're in uncharted waters, so nobody really knows what's going to happen next. We've got these big money bazookas, you know, supporting Wall Street. So maybe things go on and on and upward from here. But bad stuff is happening in the real world. So maybe things don't go upward. Maybe there's another wave of panic. Maybe Wall Street melts down again. My own personal view is that there's so much bad out there that Wall Street seems to be ignoring, that I do think we're likely to see another leg down. And that could create a buying opportunity for anybody that missed it in March. It could be another market-induced opportunity like we saw in March. And I think that's worth cashing up in advance up to take advantage of. That's what I'm personally doing now, is building cash for that eventuality. But there's also something else. With all these COVID shutdowns and whatnot, you've got miners withdrawing their guidance for 2020. And that affects the royalty companies that you mentioned as well. You know, they get their gold or whatever from these miners. And if they're shut down and their guidance is withdrawn, well, then your royalty company also has to withdraw its guidance. And we've seen both. So we could, oddly enough, see a situation with real, like, the primo high-quality stocks in this space. We could see a situation where they go on sale because they have a bad quarter, or it might look like they might have a bad couple quarters, even while gold and silver, or at least gold, is going up. So you could see a divergence between price and value there, because this isn't like, the people who don't go out to the movies or go out to eat because of the COVID shutdown. That dinner out is not coming back into the future. Nobody's going to eat two dinners next week, to make up for the dinner last week. That loss is not coming back. But delayed production from a gold mine or any mine, as long as the miner isn't put out of business, that delayed production does come back. You put that off and you still get that gold out of the ground in the future. And you might get it out at a higher price in the future. So I think there's a possibility here. I can't promise it. I kind of hope that we see this thing because I'd like to deploy more cash. But I think there's a significant possibility of market overreactions to what look like negative financials that don't reflect the underlying strength of the companies there. So interesting times.
Yeah, they are interesting times. But I think you are outlining a good concept here, is that some of these miners, they might not produce the best quarterly numbers, especially if this shutdown lasts for a while, and that could offer another buying opportunity. So there is a reason to still hold some cash. Let's switch focus here to a couple energy sectors. First and foremost, let's talk about uranium, because uranium has been, well, quite frankly, on a tear. It's almost at $30 right now, and that is very shortly after bottoming in the low 20s. Well, it was grinding around the low 20s for a prolonged period of time there. Mm-hmm. What's your thought on the uranium sector and the potential ability to keep moving higher?
Well, one thing is you're looking at last week's UxC number, and that's a trailing number. It's already above 32 right now, the last broker price index that I saw. So it has really gone vertical. It's up a good 25% in the last couple of weeks. And that's a big move. That's really quite, on that time frame, that's amazing, really. And that might, so which way to go? There are a lot of things to untangle here, Corey. But I guess one more thing on that real quick. When the commodity moves, then the stocks tend to move with leverage. And we have seen that. We've seen that even on down days for the market. There have been double-digit gains in some of the uranium stocks that are obvious contenders there. So this is a really interesting market to pay attention to now. Why is it happening and what to do? So why is it happening? Well, partly, I would make an argument, much like with gold, it's not just what's happening right now. Uranium has actually been on an upward trend with a lot of volatility, but a series of higher highs and higher lows since 2016. And we saw a more protracted trough recently over the last year. And now it's coming out of that with gusto. And partly that's very much fundamentals. Uranium can't be mined profitably at current prices, except by the very lowest cost producers. And the very lowest cost producers can't meet the demand for the whole market. So there's not enough mining can happen at current prices. That's the fundamental setup. But on top of that, then you have these COVID-19 shutdowns. And Canada's big producer, really the world's top high-grade, high-volume producer, Cameco, they shut down their number two project a couple months, actually last year, McArthur River, and that helped start turning things around for uranium prices. And then they announced more recently shutting down their flagship mine, Cigar Lake, which single-handedly accounts for double-digit percents of the entire world supply of uranium. It's a giant high-grade mine, and they shut that puppy down. Supposedly over COVID-19, and perhaps so, I'm sure management does care about their employees, and underground mining is a challenge for social distancing, shall we say. But they're also hurting due to low prices. It's cheaper for them to buy, or it was at least last week, cheaper for them to buy in the spot market and fulfill their long-term contracts at higher prices buying on the spot market than mining their own uranium and depleting their flagship asset at low prices. So it was interesting to me when they shut it down. They said COVID-19, but it also said, we're shutting down for 2 weeks and then we'll see. They didn't say we'll start up again after the two-week period. And then the 2 weeks pass and they say, okay, well, actually, we're not starting it up again. Indefinitely, we're just going to see how it goes. this is huge. If you think back to the last big uranium spike, 2006, 2007, that followed a good story, a good fundamental situation about supply and demand like we have today. But also the same mine, Cigar Lake, suffered flooding and they had to shut it down back then, and it was very much part of the big push that made uranium go from $7 to $140 in that rally. So this is really quite significant today. Now, I'm not promising that uranium goes up 20-fold the way it did back then. I'm just saying that it's a similar situation, and that is pretty darned interesting.
It is very interesting, but as you were outlining there, a lot of this price movement has been on the back of supply-side shocks or shutdowns in general. The world is using less energy right now. We don't know how long we're going to be in this environment, but do you see the potential here of the demand side picking up somehow, considering that all energy seems to be quite cheap right now because no one's using as much?
Right. Well, that's an excellent question, but not all energy is the same. But actually, two things. Before we get into the demand side, back on the supply side, there is a supply shock because of the COVID-19 shutdowns, but that is and will be temporary. There are already mines, not uranium ones that I'm aware of, but other mines that have been shut down for COVID-19 and are restarting again. So the thawing is already beginning. We'll see how long this lasts. But even if you start up quickly, you've already lost some production. So your 2020 output is already going to be less than what it was. So, it's important to understand that these mines can restart. The ones that were not really, really shut down, but just, there's care and maintenance and there's care and maintenance. There's when you put a mine on mothballs because you're not going back for years. And it's different when you just send folks home for a couple weeks. So there is potential for that supply to come back online is what I'm saying. And even bigger, the supply cuts that we have seen that, like I mentioned, McArthur River shutting down last year, those are voluntary cuts. That mine's still there. And, the big low-cost producers in Kazakhstan, they were kind of like OPEC, the suppliers of uranium to the world agreed to cut production to try to support prices. Those are voluntary cuts, not structural supply issues. And those voluntary cuts can be undone. And this is one reason why I'm saying that it may not be like 2007 all over again. That supply can come back on again. Or the perception that that supply is coming back on could limit how far uranium goes. That said, it is not easy to bring mothballed production back online. And some mines, uranium mines, have been mothballed. So even higher prices won't necessarily incent an immediate ramp up in production. And the COVID thing, however long it lasts, it is a significant subtraction from 2020 supply. That's baked in the cake. So it looks very good. Now, to your question about demand, there's an important distinction here in that, yes, people are driving around less. People are certainly flying a lot less. Nobody's taking cruises. So the consumption is absolutely cratering here for oil. And cheaper oil has a negative price impact on all energy. So yes, the whole energy sector writ large is suffering from a demand shock, as you say. But not all energy is equal. People not driving is one thing. People still want to turn the lights on when the sun goes down at night in their house, and they still want to cook dinner and have electricity for all kinds of things that we use day in and day out. Certainly our hospitals want to have plenty of electricity to take care of things right now. So there's sort of reserve power, or spinning reserves, as they say, and there's surge power sources for when, say, an aluminum smelter fires up and draws down a huge amount of energy. And then there's base load power, the stuff that needs to be on 24/7 to keep the lights on. And that's where nuclear power excels. It's not dependent on the wind or the sun, or it's not dependent on how full your reservoir is of water either, or other things beyond the control of man. You can build a nuclear power plant anywhere, hopefully not where a tsunami will flood it. But if you build your plant well and you site it well, it just turns out energy for decades and decades and decades, 24/7 without interruption, without hiccups, and it's there. So I'm not saying that uranium is recession-proof, but I have made this argument before, and I told people in advance that, because I've been looking for a recession anyway before the COVID pin burst the bubble, I've been saying that uranium will not react the same way as, say, copper or other industrial metals. Because even in a recession or even in a depression, people are going to want the lights to come on at night. And for that, you need that baseload power to remain there and supply uninterrupted. So uranium marches to the beat of a different drummer than other industrial minerals and other energy minerals. And we're seeing that right now. Oil is in the crater. but uranium has just gone vertical.
It absolutely has. And that's been, I think, a very impressive move. And I know a lot of people have been bullish on uranium for a while. And this move higher, well, there's no telling how high it can go. Look at that last major price spike. Just summarize for us then your overall strategies here, Lobo, when it comes to either deploying some cash into metal stocks or trying to take advantage of this bounce in uranium, even as some of the stocks have, well, performed very well on the back of that as well.
Yes, well, my overall view is that my main guidance to my readers has been go to cash, wait for the smash. Now, I have to say, I may be wrong. I said before we're in uncharted waters, and I mean that. And you have all these guys that come on these shows, CNBC and so on, and they tell you what's going to happen. And then they leave you to the consequences of whether they're right or they're wrong. So I don't know what's going to happen. And honestly, I don't think anybody knows. That's what it means to be in uncharted waters. That doesn't mean we don't know anything, but I think it's very important to understand that you don't know the future and that you are speculating. We're all speculating now. With that in mind, that having been said, my expectation is for another leg down in the broader markets. I think there is just so much bad news that Mr. Market is refusing to recognize. The optimism on Wall Street in the face of the pain on Main Street, I think, is untenable. I may be wrong, but my expectation is that there will be another major correction, another retesting of the lows in March, and potentially much lower. And if that happens, everything gets whacked. The gold stocks I like, the uranium stocks I like, everything gets whacked just because of liquidity. Gold itself can get whacked. We saw that in March too. So if you agree with me, I'm not telling you this is the future and do what I say. I'm saying if you agree with me, if you think there's another major leg down in the broader markets, then it makes sense to do as I'm doing, go to cash, wait for the smash, and then deploy in these terrific companies that will be the babies thrown out with the bathwater at that time. For more specifics on which companies, of course, people can come to independentspeculator.com and be happy to help them out. Now, if you don't agree with me, if you think the big money bazookas in Washington are going to just keep reflating the bubble on Wall Street and it's off to happy, happy, joy, joy times again, well, then I think you have a very different marching order. You're not going to be liquidating unless you have a big win on something. You're going to be looking for opportunities here and there. And that brings in the more selective opportunity picking that we talked about. Like if you have a great royalty company that, all the fundamentals are strong, Wall Street's on a tear again, stocks are going up, gold goes up because of all the free money, but the stock gets whacked because it had a bad quarter. That would be a terrific buying opportunity, even without a market crash. And so looking at selective opportunities, particularly with all this COVID-19 stuff, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities, even in a bullish market environment, for market overreactions to perceived bad news that isn't as bad as it seems, not to anybody who really understands the fundamentals in that given stock. So those would be the two pathways, depending on what you, listener, believe, not what me, wise Lobo Tigre, is telling you will be the future.
All right, Lobo, we're going to wrap it up there. I'm actually in your boat there, where we do need to be aware of another potential drop just because of how optimistic things have gotten, and don't think that precious metals or really anything is immune from that race to cash that we can see. But hey, there's a bit of a debate going on out there, and only time will tell. I will post a link to the Independent Speculator. Lobo, thanks for taking time today. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too, Corey.